Field, welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 246. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered her talents to do work she loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. As a 20-something Southern model in Manhattan, Janet Arno practiced her person-in-the-street reporting in Times Square. With microphone in hand and a cameraman in tow, she approached total strangers and asked them questions for unseen producers. Quickly, she learned the popular New York greeting, "What's your problem?" Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Janet Arno. Welcome, Janet.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here, Don.
Thank you so much. Janet, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
Yes, I definitely am.
All righty. We want to hear the whole story. Janet Arno's career in the entertainment business began at age 5 in the local romper room. Her acting credits include appearing in 16 films, 40 theatrical productions, and numerous television commercials and roles on hit TV programs such as the FX channel's Rescue Me. Experience in front of the camera has led Janet behind the camera as creator and producer. She currently is producing a web series she created about a self-made taxidermist, hunter, and chef of wild game living off the land in order to support his 4 children and wife, airing on YouTube and Vimeo. Well, Janet, you've got a lot on your plate and are doing some fascinating work. Tell our listeners around the world what you're working on now that has you engaged.
What I'm currently working on is a web series. It's called Roadkill Art. It features taxidermy. Oh. And it features taxidermy because I was hoping to do a show completely 100% on the topic of roadkill, which is kind of strange, weird, scary, interesting, intriguing. But that's a little difficult because you can only find so much roadkill within a certain amount of time. When you've got your crew ready to go, you know, you need to be able to shoot. And if you only get one roadkill and you don't get another one for 2 weeks, that's a lot of spending money on your crew, you know, waiting for that next roadkill.
You know, I have to interrupt here and ask you the one seminal question, right?
Right.
Where did this idea come from? We all know what roadkill is, but where did that come from? It's amazing.
Yeah, we've all seen roadkill. It's everywhere. But I lived on the Jersey Shore for a couple years. I was on the way to church one morning. I was on Highway 18 and headed closer into Manhattan at a big old church. And I'm telling you, within a six mile stretch, there was 18 dead deer. I mean, they were huge deer. They weren't just like little. They were. And I'm like, wow, look at these gigantic deer all over the interstate. So while I'm sitting in church, I'm just daydreaming away, just trying to figure out who in the world is going to go pick up all of those dead deer.
Yes.
So in the meantime, my brain is just creating a TV show. I am thinking about a character like Beetlejuice going with his crazy old truck and going to pick up all the dead deer.
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, I thought, okay, well, that's kind of going to be an interesting show about the person that picks up the dead deer. So I did a little research, and I did go out there looking for that roadkill hunter. But they're out there. They're just not that easy to find. So I did a little research on the topic, and I decided that taxidermy was the way I was going to exploit the topic of roadkill. Because that is the one craft that deals with roadkill on a continual basis, because they're skilled enough where they can get roadkill. They can take it and turn it into art. If it's really fresh roadkill, then they know how to actually prepare it so it can be eaten, which is done a lot now in America, especially in the colder states, because so many deer, there's thousands of deer that they get hit every single year. So they get dropped off at the homeless shelters, and now those shelters, you know, have learned how to skin and prepare the really healthy deer meat. It's healthy for people.
Now, that sounds like a very, very innovative idea, especially with so many hungry people out there. Okay, well, go on.
What next? I went out there searching for that right taxidermist. I started with the state of North Carolina. Then I went to South Carolina and Georgia. I pretty much tried calling every single taxidermist that I got within those three states. And one thing about taxidermists is they don't really answer the telephone when you call them. So I just picked one off of a list in Kershaw, South Carolina, and I just showed up at his studio.
Wow.
So, you know, I went, drove up, lots of dogs coming barking and bark. But he walked out of his studio, which is this cute little wood shack. And, you know, I said I was interested in taxidermy and wanted to see some of his work. So he took me in, started showing me his work, and this guy just was making jokes and just so jovial and funny. I was like, oh, wow, I like this guy's personality. So after a little while, I said, you know, I'd be interested in doing some video with you. Are you interested? He said, sure, sure. So shot one video, and I just decided he was the guy. He's got an amazing family that works with him that brings so many elements to the topic and to the show, like hunting. I love it that his wife hunts. She's 45. She's a nurse by night. So, you know, she's not able to cook dinner because she's got to go to work. So he does all the cooking, but she does a lot of the hunting because he's so busy, you know, doing the taxidermy. And she always says, Janet, I bring home the biggest bucks. I bring home the biggest everything. And she does. She's like a really, really great hunter. So, and then he also has they have a daughter that's 17 that's the co-lead in the show because she works hand in hand with her father doing taxidermy herself. So I've got a 17-year-old girl that's a taxidermist. She's a hunter as well, and she helps him in his deer processing plant. And to me, to have a young girl that's already got so many skills is so interesting. And then also I have the element of the father-daughter relationship, which is a great one. It's healthy. It's wonderful. So I love having that element to show as well within the show. Mm-hmm. So the show is called Roadkill Art, but there's like so many interesting elements within the show due to this wonderful family that I have found for the show.
Exactly. How are these shared? Where are they on the internet?
I put everything on YouTube and Vimeo. So anybody can see any of the webisodes. Just put Roadkill Art in the search box and you will find them.
Good. It sounds really interesting. As you know, everyone's life journey is composed of turning points, passages some call them, and these are times in our lives when we're faced with obstacles and opportunities and choices that determine the next period of our lives, and these are events and people that influence us strongly in our career and life journey. Take us back in the story of Janet Arnault and tell us some of your stronger influences.
Well, before I was ever producing and creating content, I myself was a talent. I lived in Manhattan, so I was signed with an agency called Wilhelmina.
Oh, sure, they're here.
Yes, and I was the first person to ever sign that was a model that could act. So I was a commercial model, not a fashion girl, because I really didn't start doing any of this until I was I didn't get to Manhattan until I was like late 20s. So for a model, that's much older. You know, they want teenagers so they can take that person and groom them and keep them for a long life and take them from one category to the next. But in Manhattan and being Southern, one thing I got hired to do often was interview people in the street, just asking questions. And one thing I noticed about New Yorkers, when they get angry, is they would scream, "What's your problem? What's your problem?" And I just thought that was so funny. That was hysterical. So I thought, okay, I was observing that while I was doing this one particular job I always got hired to do. In the meantime, as a model, I was going out on 10 castings a day, just 10 a day. And, you know, you have to compare yourself to someone that's doing what you do. So I compared myself to Cindy Crawford because I thought, you know what? I'm at this age. I'm not famous. And I have to do all these castings. And someone like Cindy Crawford, her talent is so well known. She doesn't have to go on any casting. She just gets the jobs. So I thought, you know, I can't just keep putting myself in a position where I'm dependent on everyone to hire me. So with that person, that was a turning point. I was on 10 castings one day, and I'm telling you, I snapped. I thought, I just can't keep going on a zillion castings in a day to get that, you know, one job out of the whole week. And the jobs were great. They pay well. But I didn't want to be that dependent on a casting for my work. So with the perspective that I'd already come across on New Yorkers and their "What's Your Problem?" slogan that they would scream out of anger, when I interviewed, I just would start asking people, "What's your problem?" And it just happened that I always had the same cameraman when I was interviewing in Times Square. And this was like, you know, like little segments for all the news channels. And I'd go out in the street and say, "Well, what do you think about Thanksgiving? Do you know anything about the Indians?" And it was always silly and cute. And, you know, people always gave usually it was like a young child that would give an accurate answer to some of the questions because they were in school. But, you know, I just thought my cameraman from doing that, he had made a little pilot of me asking people, "What's your problem?" We put it together, showed my agent. They loved it. So it took a little bit of time because I wasn't considering myself a producer, but I thought, this is what I'm going to do. So I did. I started shooting a show called What's Your Problem? Just going out in the street doing interviews. I aired that on Time Warner in Manhattan for a while, and from there went to National Lampoon. And I was surprised that it was so received by the kids. Kids love What's Your Problem. So did that for a while, put everything on social media. And in the meantime, I started writing other shows. So I keep a slate of about 25 shows that I pitch. You know, there's always a new one I add. There's one I take off for this reason or that reason. And then I add. So my turning point was just getting to a certain age. My craft was modeling and acting and realizing it was time to add something else. Not that I really needed to. I wanted to. I really wanted to. And when you're in entertainment, as you get older, you know, opportunity, you change. You want to do different things. And opportunity presents itself as you grow within the business. That's why, you know, most people do start as a talent and end up, you know, directors, producers, executive producers. And that's how I ended up exactly where I am today, was starting as a talent and moving on, making that, having my turning point. And now producing. And that's pretty much all I want to do now, as I want to produce and write and create the shows. I'll perform if I have to, or if it saves on the budget, but I prefer to do the producing and writing now.
Mm-hmm. You know, the statistics are pretty daunting about people around the world using their talents and their skills to do something meaningful. People are making good livings oftentimes, but they're still not in their sweet spot. In your opinion, based on your life journey, why are people not as able to get into using their talents and creating a vision for their own lives independently? What happens there?
I believe people get in survival mode and they get caught up too soon, too fast with too much, and they have to have a job. They have to pay for this. And that's one thing I've been really big on. I will not overextend myself. I don't have debt. And when you keep yourself more free from debt is when you're able to be free and actually do exactly what you want. Because in Manhattan, I remember in my apartment, it was on 54th and 8th. I'm like, you know what? You're going to do exactly what you want. What is that? And I said, I'm going to do What's Your Problem. I want to do the show What's Your Problem. So, and I believe that's what happens with us. We just get so caught up where we have to continue with whatever job we're in to make, you know, pay the bills and take care of the family and all that.
Yeah, precisely. What would you say to folks out there that are in that cycle about a way to break out of it or inch their way out of it? Maybe they can't do a wholesale shift. I mean, that's pretty much impossible.
Yeah.
But how would they inch their way out of it? How would they break clear and be able to do some, see other options for themselves?
First of all, I think anybody can do anything they want. And I think you can supersede when you have that one idea or that one invention. But I know it's important to be careful. You know, you just don't want to quit a day job when there's not a dime in the bank. But what you can do is you can start downsizing, just alleviate debt. We have debt we don't even need. You know, sometimes, you know, you don't really need the golf course that's going to cost so much per year. You could get rid of that. And actually that money that you spend on your club or something like that, that can be going into your dream, your, you know, your project, your invention, you know, whatever it is that you want to do. Because I believe everybody has something in them that they really, really want to do. But just start downsizing and use some of that income to start your dream without, you know, quitting your day job at first. And, you know, when it's time to quit your day job, you'll know.
Exactly.
When that hobby or that dream starts growing, you'll know when it's time to stop and move on to that, you know, what you really want to do.
Right. It just takes that discipline to pull aside those X number of hours a week or just a 30 minutes or an hour a day to be reflective and be quiet and, you know, think about it and go deep, get feedback, read, study, right?
Right. Yeah. And I'm big with schedules. When you're self-motivated and independent, there's no boss to say, you got to be at work at this time. You have to do this. You're going to get fired. You don't have that pressure. So it's not like, you know, you could go to the beach all day, but I'm very self-disciplined and I like to keep a schedule, you know, from 7 to 11 every morning. I edit. Then I do my phone calls, you know, within these 2 hours. And then I do this type of work. So I totally schedule myself. And when you do that as an independent, it keeps you organized. It keeps you where you need to be without having that boss and that pressure.
Yes.
It's very important.
No, it's vital. What aspects of your life have been most profoundly impacted by you doing this, by you figuring out that you wanted to be your own boss and do your own thing? What have been the...
Well, I really have to say it would be freedom. And freedom has its ups and downs. But, you know, even when I was really young, I was a little silly. I tried not to be too silly because, you know, it just wasn't too cool. But I remember in fifth grade, the first time I wrote, you know, we got to write anything we wanted on a piece of paper. We got to write a report and it could be any topic. And then we got to stand up and read it. So I wrote about these crazy elephants I made up, that these elephants did this and did that. So it was my turn to stand up and read my 3-page report on this whole thing I completely made up. And I'm laughing so hard, I can barely get the words out of my little story. And I'm like, I guess I'm 11. And I look up at my teacher, and her eyes are so big and so wide. I think she was in shock. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I looked at her and said, how come my teacher doesn't think this is funny? But even the fact that, you know, I had that silliness inside of me so young. And then even later in life, I did take acting classes in Atlanta. I started as a talent, and, you know, I so wanted to do all these crazy characters, and my teacher was like, that doesn't fit your look, Janet. You can't do that. But now, you know, now I every so often jump on stage and do a little stand-up. That's my hobby.
Okay.
Stand-up is my hobby.
Okay. Are there influential books or resources that you like that you could recommend to listeners that you think could be illuminating?
You know what I think is important? If there's something that you really want to do that you're not doing yet, you know, if it's engineering, if it's acting, if it's modeling, I completely believe you find that person that you really like their skill and you like their talent. You need to watch them. You need to see what they do. You need to read about that person. You kind of want to delve into their mind a little bit and see how they've started out. Everyone always looks at the end result. That's great. But you got to look at how in the world they got to that success. And I think that's the important thing to do when you're ready to do something. You know, I have people I really like. I really like to observe comedians that write. So, of course, Ben Stiller. Love Ben Stiller. Love Will Ferrell. Now we've got some great girls too. But, you know, those guys are amazing talents. They're comedians and they're writing. So I like to watch what they're doing and read their works if I can get a hold of a script, because I'm watching these genius minds put down words in a certain way and I see their jokes. Well, that's what I'd recommend as far as reading is research that person that you'd like your career or your dream to be in a direction that theirs is going.
That's well said. As you said, we tend to look at the end result. And when you look at a musician or a talent, a comic or anybody, an actor or a brain surgeon, you think, wow, look at them. And the fact is there were years and years and years and years where that singer was in a smoky coffee bar with 20 people not paying attention to what he was singing. You know, we have to look at the whole journey and look at, like we're doing here, look at the turning points and what happened to get them noticed. So what about this amazing thing called the internet? How do you use the internet today to build your life and business? I know it's amazing, but what are a few things you use?
Well, first of all, the internet is a godsend, because if you're a startup and you want to start something, you can get a Facebook page for free.
Yes.
Because I tell so many people that don't go spend your money on a website, because first of all, if you don't have any income coming in yet for your dream or your new business, you got to pay the fees to keep it up. You got to pay, you know, your host. You got to do the work to keep it updated. When social media, Facebook, I think Facebook is so great for businesses because it is such an easy way to communicate with your fan, your viewer, your contacts, your customers, your clients. They make it's the best model to be able to show what you're doing, and then work with your customer hands-on, or your client. You know, there's other great social media tools. Of course, Twitter is great, a little different. I think just communicating with Facebook is great. If you've got videos, you want to put them on YouTube. That's the best model for anybody that's doing videos to get their message out there. YouTube is terrific. There's Vimeo for a little more advanced person, which is great. But, you know, social media, thank God for that, because that really does – that's cut down the cost of expenses on businesses by being able to use that as a marketing tool and to reach a billion people a day. There's a billion people out there on social media.
Well, I think you've nailed it. I think everything you said, those are all free. And with just a modicum of expertise, which you can learn by Googling how to do it. I mean, you can set up a Facebook – you can set up a Facebook fan page, and you can get on Twitter and get going and take a few tutorials. There's so many webinars out the wazoo on all of that, you know?
I wish I could take a lot more than I do. I'd love to do a lot more webinars because there are some good ones that come scrolling through on my newsfeed, especially anything that YouTube has to offer. They update all the time, so there's always something new to learn.
Oh, exactly, exactly. No, that's great advice. You obviously have a very strong strategic mind, or you wouldn't have gotten where you are today. But what do you see strategically going forward in the next handful of years for Janet Arnault? Where are you headed?
Well, I'm headed to a position where I'll have multiple shows airing at the same time. But, you know, right now I'm proving that the concepts that I've written do work. That's why I love to do the web series and the webisodes with my ideas. It's proof of concept. Look, my first skill is not shooting. It's not editing. It's not the hands-on production. My first skill is the creating and the writing of the format and the concept of a brand new show. But I do know how to do everything. I can do everything and I do it all myself to make those webisodes for proof of concept. But in due time, I'm just going to be doing the writing and creating, and I will be able to hand over all of the hands-on production tasks to multiple people. And that will be, you know, when I at least have, I've got 25 shows. I can't say all of them are going to be hits, but I expect at least 10 of them to be hits.
Excellent. Superb. So what are you proudest of?
Oh, what am I proudest of? I would have to say one of my biggest things I'm proudest of was being accepted to go to Oxford when I was younger to study Shakespeare. That's still one of the highlights of my life.
That's a big deal. How long did you stay there?
I was there for the summer. It was with St. Catherine's College. I was one of four Americans. They toured around the world, and they interviewed – I was 24 when I went, so I was out of college. I mean, some of the kids were – I remember one boy being 14. I forgot what country he was from. I think I was actually the oldest kid there, so it was like 14 to 24 was the age span. But they went – and St. Catherine's College, it was the first time they did this particular summertime program. So they traveled the world, did interviews, and picked 40 kids. So I say kids, I was a young adult then. So it was intensive studying every day. We did 12-hour days. We got Sundays off, but it was great. And you walk around Oxford and you see everyone in those robes because they have to wear the robes when they're going to take their test. And they don't even talk to you because they're so focused. You know, if you say hi, no one stops to say hi because they're so focused on what they do. It was the most amazing energy ever. So that's definitely always going to be one of the highlights of my life.
What a huge honor. And there you were from the little girl in the fifth grade writing a fantasy about elephants. Look what it got. Look what it got you. It got you to Oxford.
That's a good way to look at it. I never looked at it that way.
Well, there, it was always in there. I mean, it's an amazing story. Well, Janet Arnault, what a great pleasure being with you today. We so much appreciate you sharing the highlights of your life journey. And I know listeners around the world have learned lessons that will help them on theirs. How do listeners get in touch with you if you'd like?
Oh, you guys, anybody can find me on Facebook. You just put my name in the search box, Janet Arnault, JanetArnEau. Or you can Google any of my shows. I've got Roadkill Art. You'll find me through any of those pages, you know, YouTube, Vimeo, Google, and Facebook. Or, my company's What's Your Problem? So if you put What's Your Problem Productions or Inc. in the search box for any social site, you'll definitely find me.
Superb. Listeners also know that they can go to our homepage, discoveryourtalentpodcast.com, and go to the podcast section and find the show notes of this fine interview with those links easily accessible. So, Janet, I think you have a free gift for listeners.
Yes, I do. I have a free What's Your Problem Lover t-shirt for the first 17 people that find me on YouTube and subscribe to my Janet Arnault YouTube page. It's a really cute t-shirt. You girls are going to love it. Guys, too, if a guy gets a t-shirt, you might want to give it to your girlfriend or your wife. But I've got 17 cute little t-shirts to give to the first 17 people that subscribe on my YouTube page.
Perfect. That's a great offering. Thank you. I want to thank listeners across the world for joining us today, as in every day. If you go to our homepage, you know that we put together an infographic, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed, 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love. Janet has mentioned several of those strategies today, explaining her life journey. We've had great feedback to this. It's free. It's an audio series, and take advantage of it, if you will. You can also subscribe for free on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like interviews like this and you like our content, by all means, please do that. We'd love to have you be a member of our tribe and tell us how we can serve you better. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them and we cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive, we thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.